Thanks everyone for having me and for coming to this talk. I'm not sure. Well, I mean, the Actonians will definitely play a role in this. As you will see, really the dominant fact about the Actonians, besides there being a norm division algebra, is that they're associative, meaning that this trilinear expression is alternating. Sorry, did I say associative? I said alternative. The Actonians are alternative, meaning that the associator is an alternating trilinear. And this has a consequence that any subalgebra with two generators is associative. This is just enough associativity so that you get this spinner identity, that if you take two spinners in 10 dimensions, pair them to a vector, and Clifford act on the same spinner, you get zero. For any spinner psi in O2, which is a 10-dimensional spinner, as we have seen several times, but I will recall. But what is the meaning of this last identity? That's really what this talk is about. I don't have a final answer, but I have some directions to pursue. But let's talk about the nature of that spinner identity. In 10 dimensions, you can think of vectors as these kind of generalized Pauli matrices, Hermitian 2x2 Actonianic matrices that I've written here. And this is really R91. And then the spinners, there are two kinds of spinners, left spinners and right spinners, but they both live on the space O2, pairs of Actonians. And there are two actions of vectors on these spinners depending on which chirality you're thinking about. Likewise, there are two pairings that take spinners to vectors. So this expression, if you check, is a Hermitian matrix. So this is a vector. But note that now for the positive chirality, we have this tilde, which is trace reversal. It's the operation of taking A and subtracting a scalar matrix with the trace of A. So this allows us to give a very quick proof of this identity that really highlights the use of alternativity. And we found this proof in a paper by Dre, Janeski, Minog. It's been talked about a lot in the work of Dre and Minog, this particular identity. But as far as I know, this is the only paper with this exact proof. And the proof goes as follows. For either positive or negative chirality spinners, if you act by the spinner to vector pairing on the spinner, then you get this expression with a tilde, with a trace reversal times psi. And it's easy to expand this out in just a line or two to see that it's equal to this expression, which is clearly zero because psi involves two elements of O. So it only involves an associative subalgebra of O for any particular psi. So by alternativity, this is zero and this spinner identity holds. This identity has some important physical consequences, namely that the D equals 10, N equals 1 super Yang-Mills theory depends on this identity for its supersymmetry. And the Green-Schwarz action for the superstring in Super Minkowski spacetime of type 2a or type 2b depend on this identity for its kappa symmetry. There are several equivalent forms to this identity. One is the one that I've just been showing you, that he has this easy proof due to alternativity. Another one is the fact that the square of any spinner is isotropic. It's a null vector in Minkowski spacetime. But there's a third way of understanding this identity that I want to focus on, which is that the expression gamma, where I take a vector and two spinners, I bracket the spinners and then take their inner product with the vector, defines a cocycle in Lie algebra cohomology on the super translation algebra. So this is a Lie super algebra. And the only non-zero part of the bracket is the one that takes a pair of spinners and gives you a vector, the spinner to vector pairing. The vectors commute with everything in this bracket. And this is an important Lie superalgebra. It's part of the supersymmetry algebra. One way to write the supersymmetry algebra, also called the super Poincaré algebra, is as a semi-direct product of the rotations and boosts with the super translation algebra. So, yeah, this depends on this concept called Lie algebra cohomology. I want to talk briefly about what that is. So Lie algebra cohomology is defined. Are there any questions? For G of Lie algebra, it's defined on the Chiavelli-Eilenberg complex. Which is just the following complex. It's the exterior powers of the dual of our Lie algebra. With differential that if you have some element that's waiting to eat p plus one elements of your Lie algebra and give you a number, this is just the sum where I bracket two selected elements from that list and then insert the rest of them. So compare with the usual coordinate free definition of the exterior derivative. That's where this formula, I believe, originally came from. But d squared equals zero. So we can define the Lie algebra cohomology of the algebra G by just taking the cohomology of this complex. But thanks to having this cocycle in the algebra cohomology, there is an algebraic object that we call an L-infinity algebra, superstring of T, extending the supertranslation algebra T via this cocycle. So what is an L-infinity algebra? This is really my proposed answer to how to understand this spinner identity. An L-infinity algebra is like a graded Lie algebra with a differential. And there's a bracket on the L-infinity algebra. But the Jacobi identity fails. So the Jacobi identity only holds up to an exact term. So if I passed a cohomology, this would indeed give me a Lie algebra. But I want to work directly on the L-infinity algebra. And there's a this exact term is controlled by a trilinear expression. Which I'm going to demand satisfies an analog of Jacobi. So here's the actual definition of an L-infinity algebra. It's a graded vector space together with maps of degree where each map has an arity n, and the map of arity n has degree n minus 2, and it satisfies these generalized Jacobi identities, where if I nest one kind of operation in the other, and I take a certain permutation of the arguments, and weight it by certain signs, then that has to sum to zero. This is quite a complicated identity or a set of identities, but I just want to emphasize that this is infinitely many operations, one for each ln, satisfying infinitely many identities. So how does this compare to what I wrote before? Well, so L1, that's what I was calling D, this differential. This has degree 1 minus 2, which is negative 1. So it's a map that indeed lowers the degree. just like this differential. L2, that's the map I was calling the bracket. This has degree 2 minus 2, or 0. So it doesn't change the degree. And that means that, and then L3, that's this map that measures the failure of the Jacobi identity, sometimes called the Jacobiator. This has the degree 3 minus 2, so it's degree 1. So that means that this expression for the failure of the Jacobi identity makes sense in terms of degrees. These brackets don't change the degree of x, y, and z. This raises the degree by 1, but then d lowers it again. So overall, neither side changes the degree. Okay, so why should we care about L-infinity algebras? Well, they're connected to lots of interesting mathematics and to lots of interesting physics. So, physically, the first place that they were recognized was in string field theory. This is work of Barton Zwieback. And mathematically, the first place that they were recognized as such is in deformation theory. This is work of Schlesinger and Stasheff. But they actually showed up a bit earlier in a less recognizable form, the theory of rational homotopy theory. And in the free differential algebra approach, the FDA approach in supergravity. This is work of Daria and Frey. And these days, besides still being considered in string field theory and in the FDA approach to supergravity, they're also being thought about as part of a program called the Brain Bouquet, which almost sits between these two. This is mostly the work of Sati and Schreiber. And again, something that almost sits between these two, these days, they're being thought about as connected to factorization algebras. In quantum field theory. This is Costello and Gwilym. So I hope this picture conveys the idea that these objects might be important. Let me tell you a little bit more about how this spinner identity leads to an L infinity algebra. So let me tell you what this specific L infinity algebra superstring T is. So this is an L infinity algebra L, where L zero is T. L one is just R. And all the higher L's, all the higher degrees are zero. A lot of this L infinity algebra is going to end up just being zero. So L1, which is this differential, is zero. L2 is just the bracket on T. And L3 is this cocycle. So note that for in the sense of degrees, this makes sense. L3 being a cocycle, it eats three elements of this algebra and gives you a real number. So that's L0, that's L1, so L3 has degree one, as it must.
John, is this a good time to mention that Lee has a question in the chat?
Oh, please. I don't think I see the chat.
Well, I can ask it. A long time ago, Bernd Constant had graded Lie algebras and graded Lie manifolds. Are these developments in the same direction?
So Constant's theory of graded Lie algebras and graded manifolds were what we would today call Lie superalgebras and Lie supermanifolds.
Right.
So they had a Z mod 2 grading, but they didn't have a Z grading. So this is really an extension of this idea in the sense that each of these, I've been sweeping this under the rug, but this has a Z mod 2 grading because it's a Lie superalgebra. And this does also, but it's trivial. And these gradings are independent. So there's an extra Z grading. Are there any other questions? Okay, so, and then finally, the generalized Jacobi identities. So all of the other maps, Ln are equal to zero for n greater than or equal to 4. And generalized Jacobi identities hold if and only if gamma is a cocycle. Which hold if and only if this spinner identity holds. So it is indeed an L infinity algebra, and in a way that makes it intimately related to our spinner identity. Okay. So there are, in fact, so this is just one example of this. This example lives up here in dimension 10. But in fact, all of these are amenable to similar constructions. All of these dots in the brain scan. So each dot represents a green Schwartz. P-brain action. The one brains being the string. And this is all classical, except at dimension 10. But all of these have an L infinity algebra. All of these have an L infinity algebra extension, and the construction is uniform in division algebras. R, C, H, and O. Where this is R, this is C, this is H, and this is O. And all of this can be taken up a notch to membrane theories as well. So these also depend on a spinner identity. And this spinner identity, which I will write for you here, is that the bracket of psi with psi acting on psi equals zero can also be proved uniformly by just changing your division algebra.
John, is this a good place to interrupt?
Absolutely.
You know, I noticed that John Baez has given very helpful answers to Lee's questions in the chat. John, I was maybe going to suggest, would it be possible to actually say those because for the benefit of people who will be watching the video later? Because I don't think the chat will show up.
Okay, well, I was trying to be unobtrusive, but I guess my cover was blown. So I was just trying to say a bit more about this constant stuff. So Costant looked at Z-mod 2 graded the algebras and manifolds and things. And that Z-mod 2 grading from a physics point of view just reflects the usual distinction between bosons and fermions being even and odd graded. Whereas this new Z grading that John is talking about here is about, a good way to think about it might be to think about it as about dimensions like particle, string, tube, brain, and so on. So those are natural numbers in that case. And so then the superstring L infinity algebra that John is talking about has both aspects because it's an L infinity super algebra. So, and the particular one that he was talking about lets you describe describe parallel transport of superparticles and also superstrings in, I guess, some 10-dimensional string theory. And so it has both gradings because it needs to talk about both bosons and fermions, and it needs to talk about both particles and strings.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, that was really good. I wasn't going to talk about the parallel transport aspect of this story, but I'm glad you brought that up. That is a nice way to think about the gradings. Okay, so any other comments or questions?
So at the top of your membranes is some object that's found in the Octonians.
Yes.
And that also preserves the Z2 grading. So you somehow manage to have things that are fermions and Octonians at the same time. And is that correct?
Yes, they are. So the spinners here, let me move to the next slide because I think that's where I digest this. So yeah, so let K be a norm division algebra of dimension K. So K here is a power of 2, so it could be 1, 2, 4, or 8. And there is a super translation algebra T sub K and dimensions K plus 2, and an L infinity algebra extension of T that I call superstring, because these are the superstring dimensions in the brain scan and the data that we're putting in is that co-cycle that allows you to construct this Green-Schwarz action. Mm-hmm. In dimensions one higher, there is another super translation algebra. This is a different one. So the spinners here, are defined on K to the 4. So this is a different super translation algebra in spacetimes of dimension one higher than the others. So 4, 5, 7, and 11. And in this dimension, the important one from the point of view of M theory and supergravity, the spinners, as you were asking about, Lee, yes, are valued in O4. So they are, in some sense, fermionic, octonionic fields, in some sense.
Well, I don't want to hold up your program, but I'd love to see the algebra of those written out.
Right. So this is in our paper, supersymmetry. Actually, it's division algebras and supersymmetry.
Okay. 2. Very
good. And there's a nice summary in my thesis as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. Okay. So we have this kind of pipeline where I'm taking a norm division algebra. From its structure, I'm deriving spinner identities. And then by interpreting those identities as co-cycles, I'm getting L infinity algebras, actually L infinity super algebras, because there's both a Z mod 2 grading and a Z grading. So where do I go from here? Well, there are a couple of things that you can do.
Maybe before you do those, I see Tejinder has a question also.
Please.
Hi, so just a small question. When you go to D equals 11 for K equals 3, do you have two time-like directions now?
No, it's space-time. You still have a space-time, which is
it's
one.
It's
10 plus 1, yeah. Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, maybe I should say that here. That V is equal to RK plus 2 comma 1. So that's 10 plus 1. Okay, so now that I have these L infinity algebras, what am I going to do with them? Well, there are a couple of things that you can do, some of which I did. One of them is that you can try to really think of an L infinity algebra as like a Lie algebra. And then you can look for a corresponding group whose infinitesimal approximation is the infinity algebra you started with. And that's the direction that I went in my PhD thesis, which I don't want to go into in very much detail, which is why I'm putting this notion in quotes. There is an L infinity group whose infinitesimal approximation, whose Lie algebra is superstring, these L infinity extensions of the supertranslations. And the same thing holds with the same construction for the two brain extensions in dimensions one higher. Okay, so that's one thing that you can do. This is, I guess I feel like this is more of a mathematical direction, but you can also try to really apply these ideas to physics. And you can really take the idea of extension seriously, and then you can get a picture like the brain bouquet of Fiorenza, Satti, and Schreiber. So the idea here is, why stop at just one extension? We did this extension from the supertranslation algebras, which in the Satti-Schreiber language shows up as R D slash N. So these are the extensions that I was showing you earlier. But then you can look for additional cocycles on these L infinity algebras. And these additional cocycles turn out to correspond in a fairly precise way to not just to the brains of the brain scan, but to the kind of missing brains on the brain scan. The brain scan didn't have any D brains. It didn't have the M5 brain. It didn't have, I think it did have the NS5 brain. So these brains in the boxes are new. They were not in the brain scan. Okay.
Could you say, you may have said this before and I missed it, but so the brains that were in the brain scan were those with what property? What exactly was included in the brain scan?
So the ones that are in the brain scan are the ones that have a Green-Schwartz type action functional, where you have a kinetic term and a kind of Wessumino-Witten term.
Okay.
And those are the ones that, yeah, such that you have kappa symmetry. The new ones are the ones that support additional fields. So like on D brains, you can have a collection of coincident D brains and you can have a gauge field on that collection. So the new ones. So now includes brains with fields. On their world volume. All right. So then in some work with Satie and Schreiber, we tried to equivariantize this idea. And the results are quite complicated. So I just want to give some basic ideas, which is that the idea is brains on spacetimes with singularities are interesting. They lead to interesting physical phenomena. This is really Acharya and Witten. Singularities are often, not all singularities, but sometimes of orbifold type. We take a space. You take your space-time and you mod out by a finite group. So make the L infinity algebra data equivariant. In this finite group. And this leads to gigantic tables of brain data. But the important thing that we were missing before that this seems to capture is that it leads to black brains. And a nice side point is that thinking of gamma mu, these 11D gamma matrices octonionically often leads to nice G. So in this particular paper, the octonions in constructing these co-cycles, it didn't show up so much in constructing these co-cycle data, in constructing these spinner identity data, but they were quite useful for getting our hands on these finite groups, which are to act on our spacetime. And finally, I want to note, I want to advertise some work by Elliot Chris Elliott, Pavel Safronov, and Brian Williams, which I'm sure is related to the other things I've told you, but I'm not sure how yet. But let me just tell you briefly what they do. So they think about, basically they construct an L infinity action of supersymmetry on the Batalon-Vilkovitsky version of super Yang-Mills. So in the BV version of super Yang-Mills, I'm gonna focus on my favorite cases of D equals 10, N equals one. We have the Gaugino. We have the gauge field. And we have the Gaugino, its super partner. But we also have the ghost. And in Batel and Vilkovitsky, you also have antifield partners for all of your regular fields and your ghosts. Let's put those all together into a single graded vector space called E. An L infinity action of t on e consists of the following data, that you can have arbitrary tensor powers of your Lie algebra t acting on E, and again, obeying equations, obeying generalized Jacobi type equations. And this is exactly what they construct. And this is my last slide. I want to say a little more about this. So rho n has to obey generalized Jacobi like equations. And Elliott, Williams, and Safronov prove this, making heavy use of my favorite spinner identity from this talk. And the virtue of having this L infinity action is that at least according to Elliott, Williams, and Safronov, this action holds off shell. Unlike the usual, which requires the equations of motion of Super Young-Mills theory to close. Okay, that's all I wanted to say, so thanks very much. And please ask some more questions.
All right, thank you, that was a great talk. It was great to have a Blackboard talk. Does anyone have any questions? Cole, go ahead.
Yeah, just a real quick one. John, could you say a word about early on in one of your early slides, you mentioned something about factorized algebras, that's something that Costello was working on. Can you say a few words about what that is?
Sure. So I'm no expert on this, but so the idea is that factorization algebras are Costello and Williams approach to observables in quantum field theory. And the idea is that it's a machine O that to any open set U inside of your spacetime assigns the set of all observables that you can measure on U. And to any disjoint opens, um, it assigns an operation. From the tensor product of these observables into the observables supported on both U and V. This is the algebra. This is the algebra part of the factorization algebra. I guess this side is the factorization. And that's pretty much it. That's almost all I know, which is that it's an approach to observables in quantum field theory by Costello and Gwilym. That assigns observables to open sets and assigns products to disjoint open sets.
Got it, thank you.
Okay, if there are no further questions, are there any further questions? If not, surely it was because it was the clearest talk so far. So, it certainly was a very clear talk. Even if some of us probably got lost near the end, it was a great talk. So let's thank John one more time, and I'll see you next week.